About that. Okay, here we go. So tonight's shiur, we'll be discussing what's on the menu. What should we be making for Shabbos, or what should we be serving at the Shabbos meal? This is like a little bit all over the place in terms of jumping back and forth in the Shulchan Aruch, different simonim, but we'll try to keep it relatively clear and hopefully organized as well. One thing I want to start off with before we really get into tonight's shiur is I think Zahava raised the question last week, what should a Sephardi person be doing? If I remember, remind me if I'm correct on this, but I think the question was, we had a question about frozen challah and whether or not frozen challah is going to constitute lechem for lechem mishnah. So many times, like we have in the middle of, you know, Shabbos day, whatever the case may be, we forget to defrost a second challah. And one of our challahs for lechem mishnah often ends up being a frozen challah. And we discussed whether or not that's okay. And we had a three of machlokes. The Tzitz Eliezer basically said it's fine because you have two challahs and, you know, it's Zecher Laman and it's fine. That was the Tzitz Eliezer. Rosh Shlomo Zalman said, and this is quoted in the footnotes of the Shmir Shabbos Kehochasa, that as long as it's going to be Ro'i L'Achila at some point in the meal, meaning it can't just be Stam, you have two challahs, that's nice, and it may serve as a Zecher Laman, but we have to remember that the man was edible. We could eat it as ro'i la'achila, was fit to be eaten, and therefore, says Rosh Shlomo Zalman, the challah that you're taking out of the freezer needs to be fit for eating. And he adds that as long as it will defrost at some point over the course of the meal, that is sufficient. And then we quoted lastly, the Shevet Alevi, Rav Vosner, who said, no, it's no good, because there are opinions that say you have to cut both challos, and since you have to cut both challos, they have to be ready to be eaten right now, and he felt that was not okay. Rav Avadya, Rav Sternbach and others, the Shmir Shabbos himself says that having a frozen challah is okay, seemingly siding with the Tzitz Eliezer. So that's just one thing. But the question was that if you say that there's a shaila about a frozen challah, so should a Sephardi, I think it was specifically with regards to a Sephardi, should they use a matzah? Because we did quote that if a person doesn't have lechem mishnah, if they don't have a challah, so b'di'evet, at least they can use pasav b'kistin, a cracker, a cookie, something like that. A mizonos that's considered a pasav b'kistin, and that would be sufficient, right? That would you know, count there again in a bidyevit situation, but that would be sufficient enough for lechem mishnah. And the question was, should a person use a frozen challah or should a person use a pasav b'kistin? So I'm not a posik. I'm just a regular guy over here who likes to learn Torah with everybody. But I think the answer would be that I think that the frozen challah is probably better than having pasav b'kistin. First of all, because there are opinions. The Gedolia Poskim would say frozen challah is okay. Even though Rav Shlomo Zalman said it has to be able to defrost at some point during the meal, Rav Avadya, Rav Sternbach, and others, Shmir Shabbos, say that it's okay, even if it's completely frozen. And because of that, I feel like having a challah is better than having a matzah, because a matzah for a Sephardi, again, and this is the point, a matzah for a Sephardi person throughout the entire year is a mizonos, and therefore it doesn't have the same oomph as an actual challah. Now that I'm mentioning this, though, this past Friday night, we were having a meal with a couple couples, and someone mentioned that they took out challah, or what they thought was challah, but it turned out either, I think he pulled it out of the freezer, maybe his wife pulled it out, whoever it was, doesn't make a difference, but when it went into the freezer, it was really just dough. I don't know if anybody does that here. When they make challah, sometimes they freeze dough, and then you can bake it Erev Shabbos, and it's fresher than baking challahs and putting them in the freezer. I don't know if anybody does that. Anybody do that? Maybe, maybe not. Okay, fine. But anyway, the point is that whoever made the challah dough didn't bake it. So they took it out of the freezer, popped it into the oven 30 minutes before Shabbos, thinking that it was just going to defrost or something like that. And it wasn't fully cooked when Shabbos came along. So if you have a very, very doughy challah, meaning exceedingly doughy challah, more dough than challah, would that count as your lechem mishnah? So I thought that was an interesting question. I got all excited. I didn't really say anything. But in my head, I got excited because I thought, that relates to, you know, what we spoke about last week in Shir. Presumably, again, I don't know. I didn't look this up inside at all. So, but if we just like talk it out in Svara, dough is not challah. Dough is not roi l'achila. And I would imagine, even according to the Tzitz Eliezer, right, it's hard to say that dough, which is not yet challah, looks or counts as challah. Again, I don't know. But something interesting to think about, ask your LOR and let me know what they say. Okay, awesome. So now that leads us to tonight's discussion. Any questions, first of all, up until there, what we just said? We're good. Okay, awesome. Fantastic. Thank you, everyone, for coming to learn with me tonight. I really appreciate it. And also, Chodesh Tov, like we pointed out before. Okay, so one thing to point out is that the Shulchan Aruch tells us in Siman Reish Ayin Dalid, and this is where we left off last week, many of the halachos of Bitzias Apas, right, breaking bread, are found in Siman Reish Ayin Dalid. But the Mechaber tells us in the last Si'if, Se'uda Zo Vishel Shachar, so the nighttime meal, and the meal during the day, efshar la'asosam below pas. You can't have a meal without pas. Meaning if you lack lechem mishnah in the first two meals of Shabbos, so then it's not considered seudas Shabbos. Now the Mishnah Berurah comments on that, saying the following, Ritzono lomar, afilu ledasa mekilim, even according to those who are lenient, as we're going to see later on, le'inyan seudas shlishis. We're not getting into seudas shlishis yet. Next week we're going to talk about zmiros on Shabbos, and then the following week, Amir Tzashem will be talking about Shalashuddis. But he says, at least a little bit of a foreshadow, he says, She'in sarach la'asos davka b'pas. There are those opinions out there, poskim, who say you don't need to have bread, you don't need to have lechem mishnah, you don't need to have anything like that by Shalashuddis. And be'ilu shnei seudos modu kuleyama. But everybody agrees that the nighttime meal, Leil Shabbos Kodesh, and then Shabbos morning, your lunch there, so everybody agrees that they require bread. Dehem ikur kvod haShabbos. So that requires bread because that's the ikur kavod Shabbos. So we see again for tonight's topic, what's on the menu. So you have to have challah. So maybe I don't know if anybody's gonna tell my wife that I said this, but very often when we make the menu, right, the shopping list and the menu, I think they go hand in hand, two separate pieces of paper, right, or one piece of paper with a line down the middle. But the point is, my wife always puts down on the menu challah, and I always laugh because I say it's a davar pasha, like you can't have a meal without challah. But the point is, Mishnah Berurah is saying, no, you have to remember always to have challah at every single meal, for sure, nighttime and daytime, because that's the ikur kvod Shabbos. So you have to remember to have challah at our meals. That's nikuda number one. Now, 1b is something that we left out last week because we kind of ran out of time. But that's an interesting discussion with regards to distributing the challah and when to eat the challah. People might have different minhagim. Some people you see cut the challah, and then the person who's being botzei asapas, the person who's cutting the bread, cutting challah, immediately eats that first piece. Some people have the idea to cut it all up, right, and then take a piece and eat it. And some people have, you know, like cut it, distribute whatever, and eat as they go. The question is, what is it, you know, kind of haphazard and no one really thinks about it, or is there any rhyme or reason to it? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us here in Sif Gimel, we're going back one. Again, this is all still in Reish Ayin Dalet, Sif Gimel. In hamesubin rasha'im litom ashi yitom habotzeya. That those who are sitting around the table, those who are joining us at a meal, are not allowed to taste the bread until the mevarech, until the botzeya, the one who makes a motzi and cuts the bread, tastes some of the challah. Fine. V'im yesh lifnei kol echad lechem mishnah. But if each person has lechem mishnah in front of them, like we find that, you know, very often a bar mitzvah or some sort of, I don't know, shavah brachos and shul, something like that. Or like we mentioned last week, someone who's gluten-free who has their two oat challah rolls in front of them. So yecholim litom afa pisha dayin lo tamhu. If you have your chalos in front of you, if you have lechem mishnah, so you're connecting to the bracha of the botzeya, but once he makes the hamotzi, you're then allowed to take a bite out of your challah, even if it's before that person makes hamotzi. Fine. Now, important to point out, we'll just read two or three Mishnah Berurahs here, because they're all kind of connected to one another. But the Mishnah Berurah says, "Afal pisha nasan habotzeh lifnei kol echad ve'echad es chelko." Even if, meaning, let's say like this, the mevarech, let's say I'm making hamotzi. I make hamotzi, I cut the challah, and I pass it all out. So now everybody has a slice of challah in front of them. Still, everyone's supposed to wait for me to take a bite out of my challah. Again, even if you have your piece in front of you, you're supposed to wait. And says the Mishnah Berurah, and that really is what the Shulchan Aruch taught us earlier on in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Kuf Samach Zayin, if Tesvav, which we're going to take a look at in just a moment. Before that, I just want to note what the Mishnah Berurah says on the second part of the Shulchan Aruch. Again, we're jumping back and forth. I hope I'm being clear enough. If I'm not, please someone stop me. But we said, if everybody has Lecha Mishnah in front of them, so you don't need to wait for me, let's say, to take a bite out of the challah, you can go ahead and eat. The Mishnah Berurah teaches us, Ritzono Lomar, V'az afal pi shehu motziim bevir chaso, even though I'm being motzi all of you with my hamotzi, Yecholam litam kodam lo, you're allowed to taste before me. Aval im ein lifnei kol echad Lecha Mishnah, afal pi shekol echad kikaro sheyocham imenu hu lefanov. This is important. Sometimes at a bar mitzvah, You just have your one challah. What's it called in Yiddish? Bokalach or something like that? I don't know. Right? You have your one challah roll in front of you. That's not sufficient. It requires lechem mishnah in front of you in order to eat before the mevarech. But if you only have one challah roll, again, he says, even if your kikar, even if your roll of challah is in front of you, you would still need to wait for the botzea to taste from the challah. Fine. Why? Because he says, kulam tzrichim lismoch al ha-botzea. Sheish lefan of lechem mishnah. We want to connect to the lechem mishnah. Again, the whole purpose, the whole mitzvah here that we're discussing is lechem mishnah on Shabbos Kodesh. And if you don't have that lechem mishnah in front of you, you're really being somech and you're relying upon the botzeya, the one making hamotzi, and he is the one with the lechem mishnah. But what I want to point out is the Ramah, because the Ramah is notably quiet over here, right? Shulchan Aruch told us that the mesub and those eating are not allowed to eat before the mevarich, but if everybody has lechem mishnah, then they can before the mevarich. What's interesting, though, is that the Shulchan Aruch teaches us much earlier on, again, Kuf Samach Zayin, Si'if Tesvav, he says basically the exact same thing. In ha-mesubin, rashoim litom ad shiyutom ha-botzea. Right? If one person is making a motzi for a bunch of people, everybody has to wait for the botzea to taste. Comes along the Ramah and says like this. Aval mutter lasis l'kol echad chelko kodem shiyochal hu v'heim yantinu ad shiyochal hu. So the Ramah adds over here that everybody has to wait for the mevarech, right? What's coming from this is that, again, like even though we saw this a little bit in the Mishnah Berurah, the Ramah, again, and what we're going to show from here is that there's a machlokas a little bit, and it's a very slight machlokas, but I guess it's important in terms of knowing how we practice. The Ramah adds a little bit, right? Again, the Shulchan Aruch said that no one is allowed to taste before the mevarech. The Ramah comes along and adds that even though those around the table are not allowed to eat before the host is allowed to give them the bread or pass out the challah before he eats it, right? What do we see from there? According to the Ramah, you're allowed to cut the challah and give it out to your entire family, everybody around the table, all the guests, before tasting it. And that's not considered a hefsek. Now, that's very important because the Shulchan Aruch made no note of that. Seemingly, according to the Shulchan Aruch, what would be is that you have to make hamotzi, take that first slice, take a bite, and then you can distribute it to all those sitting around the table. According to the Ramah, you're allowed to pass it out to everybody else, and that's not a problem. Now, what's the difference? So the Mishnah Berurah, again, over there in Kuf Samach Zayin, points out the following. We won't read it inside, but he quotes the Taz, and he notes others who argue that giving out the challah before you eat it, meaning you, the one who's making amotzi, eat it, so that's considered a hefsek. Why is that a hefsek? Because the friends and family and guests around the table, they're not allowed to eat from it anyway until you eat from it, right? The Shulchan Aruch and Ramah both agree that you have to wait for the mevarech to take a bite of challah in order for us sitting around the table to eat our challah now. So what's the idea? The Shulchan Aruch says cut, take a bite, and then pass to everybody else. The Ramah is like, no. Cut it all up, distribute it. It's not a problem whatsoever. The Mishnah Berurah says, no. The Shulchan Aruch was onto something here. Because if you pass it all out to everybody, they're not allowed to eat it until you take a bite. And now you're elongating the process. And that's not okay. So again, the idea is it might be one move. Again, there are multiple options here. But one thing to do is either cut, take a bite, and then finish cutting, pass it out. Alternatively, you would be allowed, as the mevarech, make hamotzi, cut the entire challah up, then take a bite, and then distribute it to everybody else. But the idea is we want to make sure, according to this Mishnah Berurah, that the mevarech is taking a bite of challah before passing out the challah, whether that means taking a bite of the first slice, or whether cutting the entire challah, then taking a bite, and only then passing it out. The Yalkut Yosef, which is the Piskei Halacha of Rav Avadya Yosef. A lot of it had been, I think, collected by his son, Rav Yitzchak Yosef Shlita. Paskins like the Shulchan Aruch, that really, against the Ramah, that one is supposed to make hamotzi, take a bite, and then distribute it. But again, if you follow, you know, the Ramah, as Ashkenazim do, you would be allowed to distribute it, and only then, again, wait, the people who are sitting on the table, wait in order for the Botzeah to make hamotzi, and then we quoted the Mishnah Berurah, who wasn't really a fan of that. Okay, that's kind of bringing challah to a close. So any questions before we continue and moving on to the rest of the menu when it comes to Shabbos? No? Okay. If you do, feel free to put in the chat. We'll take a look at that in just a moment. Okay, so now let's just take a little bit of a background to appreciate Seuda Shabbos for a second. The Gemara in Masechus Shabbos, Kuf Yud Ches, Kuf Yud Ches, they're longer Gemaras there, but they're beautiful Gemaras that really convey just the beauty and the grandeur of Shabbos meals. The Gemara says that we're supposed to have somewhat elaborate meals on Shabbos. We're supposed to be a little, I wouldn't say over the top, but be a little bit more, some of my students would say that's so extra, right? Be a little bit more extra when it comes to a Shabbos meal, right? Have something more than you would normally have during the week. And this is really what the Gemara on Shabbos and Daf Kuf Yud Ches says. And he says that whoever increases the Ta'anugim on Shabbos, right? When you prepare a little bit more and you go a little bit beyond what you're normally going to be eating, specifically with regards to food, so that person will be rewarded abundantly. And all their desires, Komishalos Libo, will be fulfilled because you're showing that you care so much about Kavod Shabbos. By showing, right, by going the extra mile, preparing a little bit more for Shabbos, so you're showing just how special Seuda Shabbos is. And because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to reward us. The Sefer Minog Yisrael Torah says that someone who normally has three courses during a meal, let's say, or a three-course meal during the week, should make sure to have four courses on Shabbos, right? If you have two dishes, you should have three dishes, right? We're trying to up our game a little bit when it comes to Shabbos. And he even says it's not just about the food, but he talks about setting the table nicely, something we spoke about a little bit earlier in the Zman, in the semester here. But okay, to make sure that the tablecloth is set and having nice dishes, v'chule. Fine. Just a little bit more. The Medrash Tanchuma tells us that someone who has a feast on Shabbos, someone who really takes delight in Shabbos, so that one Seuda is worth more than 1,000 fast days. Right? There's a mila to fasting. There's something special about fasting, but enjoying and really delighting in Shabbos and the gift that Hashem gives us, that's very special. Not only that, on a metaphysical level, they talk about how the food that we consume on Shabbos is imbued with a certain spirituality. I don't exactly know what that means, but that's found a lot in the Hasidic literature. You look in the Sfasemis, excuse me, you look in a lot of the Sipri Hasidus, they talk a lot about how you can be mala food, you can raise and elevate food, find out what they call nitzotzos in food, the sparks of kedusha in food, but that's so much more easy. It's much more easily accessed, let's say, when it comes to Shabbos. And there are even those who have the minhag right before they eat on Shabbos to say l'kavod Shabbos Kodesh. We said maybe it's l'oneg Shabbos Kodesh, but we gave reasons to say one or the other, you know, many weeks ago. But the point is to say that everything I'm doing right now is to make Shabbos special. Now, one more point with regards to the meal in general, and that is the following. There's a Gemara in Pesachim, a pretty well-known Gemara that talks about the Yomim Tovim, Chatzi LaHashem and Chatzi Lachem, right? They talk about how certain holidays, it's supposed to be partially for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and partially for us. And that means that we spend time in shul, davening, and hopefully we spend time in shul or at home learning Torah. And at the same time, there's a notion of Simchas Yom Tov where we partake in a Suda on Yom Tov and we have, you know, whether it's Basar V'Yayin or whatever people enjoy eating. But the point is that there's Chatzi LaHashem, we have some ruchnias, and there's chatzi lachem, there's some gashmias as well. The Rambam, in discussing Seuda Shabbos, and this is a Rambam that we've quoted before, says, Chayiv Adam Lechol Shalosh Seudos B'Shabbos. A person is obligated to have three meals on Shabbos, Achas Arvis, V'Achas Shachris, V'Achas B'Mincha. One at Mariv time, one by Shachris, and one by Mincha. So Rav Soloveitchik is quoted as saying the following. I didn't see this inside, but I believe it's in Harare Kedem. I have to double check. Where he says the following. The Rambam says, Marv Shachris Mincha. What else could the Rambam have said? Make it a little interactive, anybody? Instead of saying Marv Shachris and Mincha.
Musaf. Or go Lat Shabbat Musaf, because we eat after Musaf.
Okay, good. I like that. But let's not be so frum. Right? When do we eat?
Morning, noon, and night.
Oh, there you go, right?
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, is that what you're looking for?
Exactly, yeah. There's no reason for the Rambam to line it up with the tefillos that we're saying. Right? He could have just said breakfast, lunch, dinner, nighttime, morning, afternoon. What's going on here? So Rav Soloveitchik said that the reason the Rambam is tefillah-centric in terms of explaining or telling us when we're supposed to have our su'udos is to show us that Shabbos is also a shtikol chatzi lachem, chatzi lachem. We go daven, we go to shul, right? And then we come home and we have a su'uda. Right? Shabbos is about sharing the day with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that means Bein Beruchnis and Bein Begashmis. And that's something also important to think about. When we spoke, I think the very, very first introductory shir, we spoke about running to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and how Shabbos is an oasis in time, right? It's that safe haven that we run to every single week. We're looking towards Shabbos Kodesh. So to recognize that this time of Shabbos is a unique time because we're connecting the Ruchnias and the Gashmias, we're bringing it together, we're elevating our lives and bringing Hashem into ours as well. So that's just another idea with regards to the Sud and Shabbos overall. An important point to note that the Shulchan Aruch does is that in Siman Reish Ayin Aleph Seif Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch notes a Gemara in Psachim that says that we're supposed to honor the daytime more than the nighttime when it comes to Shabbos. Kavod Yom Gadol Mi Kavod Laila. Now there are people, let's say a guy who wears French cuff shirts on Shabbos. I don't know, this is like an example that's just off the top of my head because it happened this past week, right? To wear the nicer shirt, let's say Shabbos day, because we want to honor Shabbos day more than the nighttime. But that's not just true with regards to dress or whatever it may be. It's very true with regards to food as well. The Gemara in Gittin tells us, and again, this is all found in that Shulchan Aruch and Reish Ayin Aleph, that someone who has a nicer, well, let's say like this. The Gemara in Gittin tells a story and says that a person who has a nicer Friday night su'uda than the Shabbos day su'uda should be worried because they're pogeya b'kavod Shabbos. They basically belittled the kavod of Shabbos. And again, the Gemara there tells a story about two families who were punished because they were mechabed the nighttime meal more so than the daytime. Now, the Gemara tells, or not the Gemara, but there are Rishonim and Poskim who tell stories of people who would save the better food for Shabbos day. What's important to point out is the Aruch HaShulchan, because the Aruch HaShulchan tells us that sometimes the nighttime meal looks a little bit nicer for practical reasons, right? If a person enjoys having soup, or if a roast or chicken is better when it's fresh and not warmed up, so says the Aruch HaShulchan, you do not need to delay, right? If you're going to have soup at one meal and you love chicken soup, so it's better to have hot soup Friday night than to delay it and push it off till the daytime where you're going to only be able to have it cold, right? That's not a Kavod Shabbos, right? Because you're having something that in theory tastes good, but it doesn't taste good when you're having it during the daytime. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that that shouldn't be a reason, right? If it's not going to be good Shabbos day, then don't have it Shabbos day. It's a practical concern, and you don't have to be worried about being pogeya, again, the Kavod Shabbos, because that's just a mitzvah, it's reality, that cold soup's not going to be as tasty as hot soup. Fine. Lastly, it's important to note, with regards to the overall su'uda, is that you want to have an appetite when it comes to the meal, right? We spoke earlier, I think in this Zman, when it came to eating on Erev Shabbos, to make sure you don't eat too much on Erev Shabbos, to make sure that we have an appetite for the Shabbos su'uda. And not only that, but the Darkei Moshe and the Aruch HaShulchan talk about not eating too much so that you'll have room for the su'uda. So maybe that means for some people not eating too much at the shul kiddush, if they're going to have the real su'uda at home, when they get home, right, to not go in for that, I don't know, second bowl of chalon, let's say, something like that, right? To hold off on it, even if the chalon's great in shul, and I'm sure it is in all the shuls. But the idea is to make sure that we're having an appetite, that we save room for the Shabbos su'uda, because again, the way we approach it, right? It's not just about the food, but it's our approach towards the meal, our perspective towards the meal, right? That's something important to think about as well. So many people are familiar that there's an idea to have fish on Shabbos. I don't know if anybody has that custom to have fish every Shabbos. I don't know if anybody has the custom to have fish at all three meals on Shabbos. I've heard that as well. Anybody here as a fish at all three meals person? No. Okay. So maybe we'll talk more about fish at length at another time. But the classic story, let me just check to chat actually, so there's something that came in. Yeah, so we just to clarify for Mrs. Nadoff, we did speak about the frozen challah. It seems like there is plenty to rely upon to use the second challah, to have a frozen challah as the second challah. I just wanted to make sure you caught that. Okay, fine. There's the well-known story of Yosef Mochir Shabbos. Yosef Mokir Shabbos is a Gemara and Shabbos Daf Kuf Yud Tes. Now, when I was thinking about the story, I remember when I was a little boy, there's like an art scroll book that I think tells a story, but there's also that book, anybody know what I'm talking about? The rainbow fish with the scales? That's a separate, completely separate story, but it reminded me of it, so I'm asking. That's just has nothing to do with anything, I'm just curious. That's about the fish that like have beautiful scales and they want to share with anybody, right? Is that like a... Yeah. Right, okay, fine. But I was thinking fish. Well, what?
And that's because he wonders why everybody won't be his friend until another fish says to him, well, You won't share.
Got it. Okay, fine.
Start sharing.
Separate story, but okay.
Yes.
We should remember to, we should share a fish and Shabbos also, right? If there's only one piece of gefilte left, cut it in half and share it with the person next to you. Okay, fine. Beautiful. Anyway, getting back to the story of Yosef, Mokir Shabbos, that there was a certain wealthy Gentile, a non-Jewish person. And the fortune tellers, the astronomers, whatever it was, basically said that you're going to lose all of your money, and that basically this dude Yosef Mokir Shabbos is going to acquire all of your wealth. And he said, "Not if I have anything to do with it." So he basically liquidated everything he owned, right? He sold it, and he basically used all of his money to buy a precious jewel, and he kept that jewel in his hat. I guess on top it was like Kilu, the crown jewel. And he's walking over the bridge one day, and a big gust of wind comes and it blows off his hat, or blows at least the jewel off the hat, and it falls into the water. And a fish comes and swallows it. Fine. Then the local fishermen are going fishing, right? They're out there on the water. And basically, it was close to Shabbos. It was getting dark out. It was close to Shkia. And the fishermen were like, who's going to buy the fish? What am I going to do with it? What's going to be? So one of the chevra said, yo, run to Yosef, right? Go run to Yosef, Mokir Shabbos. Guy loves Shabbos. And he's quick to buy anything he possibly can that's going to enhance his Shabbos Suda. And in fact, that's what happened. They run to Yosef Mokir Shabbos. Of course, he buys the fish. He fillets the fish. He cuts it open. And he finds the jewel there. And he's incredibly wealthy. And the Gemara says that it was Bishchos his honoring Shabbos, right? The fact that he was willing to spend money for the Shabbos Suda. So it was because of that he was zochet to receive this jewel, to be zochet to this jewel, which the Gemara says that was worth 13 roomfuls of gold. He was incredibly wealthy because of this one gem, let's say, right? The Gemara says, "Man de Yosef Shabbosa, Pirei Shabbosa." The one who spends money, allocates funds towards Shabbos, is going to be paid back by Shabbos. So next time you go to Jewel, and there's some olive dip that you could probably make at home, and it's cost $7.99 or whatever the dips cost in Jewel now. So say, okay, the covered Shabbos Kodesh, I'll do it. And you never know what you'll find in your fish one day. Who knows? But anyway, the point is that we should spend money for Shabbos, and we shouldn't be worried. It doesn't come off the top. Hashem always has her back when it comes to spending money on Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos and Daf again, Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis, tells us that many people, and it records people who would have fish on Shabbos. And some people suggest because Dog, Dalad, and Gimel, 4 and 3 equals 7 in Gematria. If you're not a Gematria person, like the Dordex, I'm sure. Maybe that's not the most compelling reason. But either way, there are lots of ideas out there. You'll say Mokir Shabbos. And others who discuss why fish is a prominent, let's say, meal item when it comes to Shabbos. When it comes to meat and wine, the Shulchan Aruch tells us in Reish Nun, in Simon Reish Nun, that meat and wine are staples of Shabbos Seudos, and just like fish, so meat is going to be among the delicacies that served La'asid Lavo, whatever that meal is, this great meal, La'asid Lavo, in Olam Haba. So meat is going to be there as well. Fish is going to be there as well. The Gemara talks about the Livyasan that was taken in the Yemei Bereshis and was salted and saved some massive, piece of herring or something like that. That's going to be saved for the meal for the Tzadikim La'asid Lavo. So not only will they have that fish, but there's always also going to be some meat. And wine is also going to be, is a staple, and it's going to be served there as well. And not only is it needed to let's say, properly fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush like we spoke about, 2 weeks ago, I guess it was. But the Mishnah Berurah says that a fine wine is going to be served at the Su'uda La'asid Lavo Yimos HaMashiach. As the Smag also notes, that drinking wine throughout the course of the meal, not just for Kiddush, but again, is another way to give honor to Shabbos. And then lastly, two classic foods that you can't, I feel like if you're Jewish, you have to have these, or you have to at least enjoy them, is Chalon and Kugel. So we'll start with Kugel first. And it's quoted, I have it here. In Siman Reish Mem Beis, there's something called Pashtida. Pashtida, I think if we were being literal, Pashtida is more like a like an empanada of sorts, something that's surrounded by dough on top and bottom. The Mishnah Berurah says, let's say like this, the Ramah in Siman Reish Mem Beis says, Yesh shikasu shibim mixas mekomos nagu le'echo mulyasa shikorin pashtida b'leil Shabbos. People have pashtida on Shabbos. Zecher laman. Why is it a zecher laman? Shay mechusa lamailo ulamata. It's something that's covered on top and bottom. So I don't know how kugel necessarily translates to pashtida, but if you make a deli roll or something like that, anything that's kind of covered, so that's a zecher l'manan, and that's a nice thing to do. And not only that, chalent is something important to have as well. Now, why is chalent important to have as well? It's not like a cute shtick, but it's something very very serious, I would say. Right? It doesn't necessarily need to be chalent. In my house, I know this is being recorded, but I hope I'm not like put in chayrim. We don't always have chalent. And the reason is because I feel like chalent always gets thrown out after Shabbos or at some point during the week. You say, oh, we'll have it for leftovers at some point, and more often than not, it gets thrown in the garbage. So what we started doing is making in these cold winter Shabbosos, we have soup. If anybody's interested in recipes, I'm happy to share. But whether it's like a mushroom barley soup or a split pea soup that you put in the crock pot, and then you have a hot dish Shabbos day. Now, why is it important to have a hot dish Shabbos day? So in the context of talking about hatmana, hatmana means to insulate food. There are two different ways, two different components of cooking on Shabbos. And again, we spoke about, maybe we'll talk about bishul in the future, but there's something called shihiya, which means to leave something on the fire, on the heat source from before Shabbos. And there's something called hatmana, which means to insulate the item as well. Now, we're not going to get into all those dinim because it's a little bit complicated and beyond the scope of the conversation right now, but there is this idea that the Karaites would not do this. They would not have warm food on Shabbos because they felt that that was considered bishul on Shabbos. And we, who follow Chazal, believe that this is completely mutter. We follow the rules and the halachos that Chazal set forth. And because of that, it's a wild line, but I'll read you the Rama. The Rama tells us, U mitzvah lahatmin l'Shabbos. It's important to do this on Shabbos. Kadesh yochol chamin b'Shabbos, in order that we have hot food on Shabbos. Kizehu mikavod v'oneg Shabbos. Having hot food on Shabbos day helps us fulfill, it enables us to fulfill the mitzvah of kavod v'oneg Shabbos. And he says these words, v'kol mi she'enu ma'amin b'divrei chachamim. Someone who does not believe in the words of Chazal, v'oser achilas chamin b'Shabbos, and doesn't eat hot food on Shabbos day, and prohibits having hot food on Shabbos day, cheshinan shema apikorasu. We're concerned that maybe this person is an apikoras. To counter the Karaites and their tradition, and not just tradition, we'll call it a misconception. So Chazal encouraged everyone to ensure to have at least one hot dish, one hot food on Shabbos day. And that's kind of where like maybe chalent was born. Again, it doesn't necessarily need to be chalent, but as long as you're having one hot dish on the course of Shabbos day, that is important. Does a hot drink count? I'm so happy you asked that, because there's an awesome story. Revel Yashiv Zatzal, he learned, I feel like, 25 hours in a 24-hour day. He was learning Yomim Valayla. Apparently, when he got married, I think it's Revel Yashiv who said this. When he got married, he told his wife, we can get married, but I don't know if it was like on condition or he just said, he asked, he said, we'll get married. I'll deny that there's no chalent. Now, I, you know, can't be a Golol Ador without eating chalent, right? No, just kidding. But why didn't he want to have chalent? So he said having chalent makes him heavy and he's going to need to take a nap. And learning Torah on Shabbos is so precious. And we'll talk about that hopefully in another shiur. The significance of learning Torah on Shabbos is exponentially greater, right? The schar you get for Limud HaTorah on Shabbos is amazing. So he wouldn't want to have chalent because it would make him tired and he'd fall asleep. So he said he would have a hot tea. And that's how he's mekayim having a hot food on Shabbos. So there you go. That is one way to answer that question. A hot tea definitely counts. The other one, what about if it's really hot and you don't want chalent? So again, like we said, have a hot tea, maybe a cup of coffee. There are other ways to have something that's warm. You don't necessarily need to have chalent during the summer, I guess, right? Okay, so that's a little bit with regards to Suda Shabbos. Again, we spoke a little bit. We'll just do a quick review to make sure we remember what we spoke about. We spoke a little bit about frozen challahs at the beginning and having challahs at all meals. We spoke about distributing the challah and making sure you take a bite before you pass it out, or at least those who are sitting around the table wait for the person who made hamotzi and cut up the challah to take his first bite. We spoke about the chashivas, the importance of preparing food for Shabbos and spending money on Shabbos, recognizing that Hashem is going to fulfill kol mishalos libo, and he's going to pay us back handsomely for spending money and allocating funds towards Seuda Shabbos. We said this beautiful idea from Rav Soloveitchik that Shabbos is also chatzi l'Hashem and chatzi l'chem, and that's why the Rambam noted that the meals are supposed to connect to or correspond to the tefillos. He didn't say nighttime, morning and afternoon, but he davka said arvis, shachris, and mincha. We spoke about making sure that the daytime seuda is nicer and has, we save the better food for the daytime meal. Again, unless, of course, you can't warm up a hot soup or something like that, the food will taste better Friday night. So then, of course, make sure you have a Friday night. We spoke about having fish Yosef Mokir Shabbos. And in addition, we spoke about having meat, wine, kugel, or maybe pashtida and deli roll, and cholin, or maybe just a hot tea on Shabbos. If one heats on Shabbos, does that count as hot instead of cholin? Meaning if someone who is Sephardi, who is allowed to warm up, let's say, soup or a liquid? No. What do we mean?
I mean, like people put on their, we don't heat on Shabbos, but somebody has a plata and they heat on the plata.
Yeah.
Not wet things, but dry things.
Yeah. So I would imagine that a lot of the rules about Shehiyah, Hatmana, Chazara, all related to Bishul. Again, Chazal allowed us to, you know, assuming the plots are set up correctly and everything like that. I think that would, I would imagine that would count as well. So, okay. Thank you everyone so much for learning with me. I really appreciate it. I hope everyone has a fantastic rest of your week.
Chodesh Tov.
Thank you. Chodesh Tov, everyone.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Thank you.